Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Aliens, UFOs, and Beyond with your hosts, Christina George and Renee Chavez, only on DTMWickedRadio.com.
Hey, everyone. It is Christina George, and welcome to another episode of Aliens, UFOs, and Beyond. Not sure if we have our co-host, Renee Chavez, with us yet.
Yep.
Renee, are you
I'm
with
right
us?
Here.
Oh,
I'm right here.
There he is. There he is. Well, as everybody probably has seen on social media, we've now have Renee's birthday passed, so we want to wish him a belated birthday to him. And tonight we're going to have a really actually fascinating interview with our guest tonight. Reverend Michael Carter, and I think that it's going to be something that it's going to make people think. I'm very, very interested in his opinions, and I'm really looking forward to the interview myself. What about you, Renee?
I am, too, because there's a lot to be tied in with, you know, with the whole alien stuff and as well with even in the Bible now. So we're starting to put the you know, basically the puzzle together.
Yeah, absolutely. And
yeah.
And he's the author of Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials in the Bible. So, you know, I noticed that, like, just dealing with the paranormal, that whenever you get, like, religion involved in it, it can become very messy.
Controversial. Yeah.
Very controversial, absolutely. Everybody kind of putting their thoughts and beliefs into what they think is true. For me, looking back at... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just saying, just with me looking back, you know, I look back when I was... We look at the books with, you know, the Egyptian walls and all of the hieroglyphics, and, you know, you would see things that look like, you know, UFOs and in caves and all these different areas, and you know, we look at how a lot of things were built, and it questions, you know, if these things were able to be done, you know, in a man-made way, or was there some kind of intervention? So, but you can talk about just about anything, but when you start to talk about, you know, the alien UFOs and religion, especially the Bible, you kind of...
It's a tough subject to get into with a lot of people because, you know, they're very tied into their religion, but there are a few who actually did some study themselves, have had those question marks, you know, well, maybe something else did intervene in, you know, in our mankind's history. So what we would once call miracles and magic at one time turned out to be a lot of scientific you know, inventions and so forth, you know, like a UFO or alien beings are able to do, you know, various things. So just the basic of the things that we're understanding now, how, you know, certain sciences works.
Right. But let's see, actually, if we have our guest on the line. Reverend Carter, do we have you on the line?
Not yet, Christina.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to keep trying. Actually, also, I sent his number to Tiffany in case you guys want to try to call him. And we'll it says we'll need to call him. Michael, he says he keeps getting the wrong number or something. So can you please give him a call?
I said I'm on it, Christina.
Okay. Well, Renee, until we get him on the line, you know, again, you know, here we talk about, you know, religion, and I can remember being in elementary school, and actually going to church, and we were. I had brought up the topic of UFOs because I had seen one, and it was almost taboo. And I was always quieted, you know, just like shush, you know, about talking about things without really any explanation. It was just because that's what you're supposed to do. And I remember seeing the picture of the Virgin Mary when she was, I mean, Mary Magdalene when she was ending up pregnant, and we see in the picture that was painted above it of, you know, a saucer-looking item up above in the sky, shooting down some kind of beam, what it looked like, into the room where she was at. Now, again, even as an adult, when I bring up these kind of topics, especially with people who are strongly against anything alien-related. Like, it's funny because I'm seeing people who are very, very spiritual, like they're, or very religious, they're starting to turn on the about the paranormal. They're starting to get a little bit of a different take on it, like, okay, well, you know, if we're not just interacting with demons, you know, okay, that's a okay thing. But if you talk about aliens, like, they'll take off. It's like a completely different crowd. I mean, is that what you find?
Yeah, you know, ever since I was, you know, with the Christian beliefs before growing up and being raised in it, and anytime when I spoke anything about extraterrestrials, they could go through a major shutdown. They took me into the back room and had this really long talk to me and how certain things are totally taboo to even speak of because they figured it's all demonic and part of all the teachings of demonic stuff. So I had to really try to figure out how to talk about it in certain, you know, in certain crowds at the same time, because they didn't want me to, I don't know, basically poison the congregation because I did talk about it with a few other, you know, friends at the time. So it's a touchy subject, especially if you've been around it for a long period of time, you know, raising it and so forth, and then you're finding out these other truths about, you know, well, these things really do exist, you know, and so it's hard to really blend it in there as far as, you know, in the Christian or any other religion that are bound not to speak of extraterrestrials of any type. So it was hard for me.
Yeah.
It was really hard.
Did you see the new news that was kind of trending out on the internet, and it was about, you know, they had now revealed, you know, the true first photo of Jesus or something like that, you know, and all the Yahoo that went with that. And I just kind of like, I don't know, it really amazes me about the controversy that talking about these kind of things can bring about. So I'm going to be very interested to talk to our guest tonight and, you know, see that when he, you know, talked to him and asked, like, what kind of controversy did he run into, you know, when he came out with this book? Because he's actually a minister, an ordained minister, and, I mean, went to, you know, a university for him. I mean, it's not like he's new. I mean, he knows his scripture. And to be an experiencer himself, it, I think, changes the ballgame. I think in no matter what field you're in, but especially when you're in where you're kind of held highly in the, you know, community's eyes.
Yeah. You know, that's what I found interesting, too. When you start looking more in like, the various scriptures, and you try to do, like, a whole lot of cross-references into secular histories and you talk about these sightings through the centuries, kind of makes you really wonder, you know, you know, how life really began here, you know, how much extraterrestrial, how much is God, how much is, you know, you got to really look at all sides of everything, especially if you're, you know, like us, we are paranormal investigators. You know, we investigate, you know, the paranormal as well as the UFO stuff.
We got lightning.
Oh, I think that we might have our guest on the line.
Sounds like it.
Hello.
Hi, Reverend Carter. Are you on the line?
Yes, hello.
Hi, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Well, we have...
Are you guys having, like, lightning storms there?
Well, we're on the... Actually, we're on the West Coast, and so, no, we are not. We're having, like, sweltering, you know, 90-degree weather, and but I heard that you guys are, because
yeah,
my...
Yeah, we will. We're going to get
network is, yes.
Oh,
yeah,
I didn't know if you were going to call. I thought, because I called a number and no one picked up, a number marked my publicist had given me. And
yeah,
I didn't know.
Yeah, well, they're actually out in New York as well. Our radio network is out of New York, and so we're actually being simulcast through Blog Talk as well as our
gotcha.
Radio network.
Yeah.
That way,
yeah.
in case, we're covered.
Yeah, and we're going to get some thunderstorms tonight too. So, but I'm glad we made it. I'm glad we made it. I'm glad we can do this. So,
I am
you.
Too.
Thank you very much.
Oh well, no. I mean, it's our pleasure. And myself and my co-host Renee Chavez, we were just talking about before you came on that, you know, writing a book like yours, I'm sure had to have caused quite controversy. I felt that you could tell it better than anybody.
Well, I'll tell you, and it's a great lead-in. What had happened, though, Christine, and this was my master's thesis, okay? And I want to, I'm always standing on the shoulders of other people, and I like to acknowledge that. And see, I went to Union Theological Seminary in New York, one of the top seminaries in the country. And when I wrote this book, I did not put my own personal experiences in there. I was still in the closet, so to speak. And but I wrote, you know, the research I had put in. And much to my delight, they accepted it. They accepted this topic as a thesis. Now, I don't know if any other seminaries would have. And Union certainly didn't have to, but they embraced it. And, you know, thank goodness. And I was really happy and delighted by their response. And then down the line, my first publisher said, you got to put your story in. And I did. And she was insistent on that. And I guess that's made a difference. It certainly puts me in a unique position. I am an experiencer or contactee. I don't like to use the word abductee, so I don't. I am an ordained clergy person, and I'm a man of color. And so I've hit the jackpot, it seems. And so I think that it's a voice that. That I bring to the conversation that we don't usually hear in the UFO community.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I could just imagine, because, you know, when I put out things in the paranormal world, because I have a group and we have two divisions. So I have one that, you know, studies and researches and helps people in the paranormal field, and then we have the other side where we deal with cryptozoology, ufology, and abductees. And so, you know, we do a lot of research. We deal with a lot of people. And I started to notice that there was kind of a turn in a lot of people who were very religious starting to kind of possibly embrace the thought of the paranormal and the afterlife. But yet when you think of anything that may be UFO related, it'll send them running. You know, it's like nobody wants to to talk about that topic. Why do you think that it is so taboo?
Well, listen, you know, we've been taught and told that this is not a subject that is really, it's not even polite dinner party talk. But I think that's changing in a way because, listen, I'm a frequent guest on Ancient Aliens, as you know. Now,
yes.
But look how long that show's been on. It's going into its seventh season. And so, you know, because why is it going into its seventh season? Because there's a market for it now. And I know more Orthodox Christians, for instance, who are talking about it. Now, we don't agree, but they are talking about it now. But their conversation is, well, you know, well, all of these individuals are, you know, they're demonic. Now, I don't particularly agree with that, but at least the conversation is going. And so that's what I'm talking about. And, you know, I'm glad because as religious people, we have to be able to talk about this. We have to be able to talk about this. We may not agree with it, but this is going on. They're crafting our skies. I mean, if, you know, yesterday the Pope at a mass said that the Catholics can baptize people who want to become Catholic, and that included aliens. So a lot of people are talking about disclosure. When's the government going to come out and tell us what's going on? Well, I think we're so far past that because it's happening now. You go on YouTube, you go, yes, not all, some of these are of dubious origin, but I mean, people are taking pictures of craft in the skies. You have the Vatican, and yesterday wasn't the first time that they've hinted about the origins of, you know, off-world intelligences and how that would not affect their theology. But people, 48% to 50% of the American people believe that the government is lying to us, and that there is such a thing as extraterrestrial life. Countries like Australia, New Zealand, of course Mexico, Argentina, Ecuador, you know, we can go Britain, France, they've released some of their classified files. So we're late on the uptake here, which America is on a lot of things. But this is disclosure. If we're waiting for President Obama or President Clinton or whoever's going to be the next president to say, guess what, folks? Now, they may do that if something forces their hand, if there's a sighting that they just can't explain away. But this is it's happening already. It's happening. And people who are still talking about, we wonder if there's extraterrestrial life, can we prove the train has left the station. And this is my belief. The train has left the station. We are so far past if there's such a thing. Now, yes, there are some people who they wouldn't believe it if a craft landed and one of these brothers and sisters knocked on their door. There's always going to be that. But people are much more open than you think. And so the conversation is going on, and I'm happy that it's going on. But I'm finding in my experience it's both end. As you say, it is taboo for a lot of people, but many people are, you know, we're past it. I mean, people know that there's extraterrestrial life. Either they've had a sighting, they've had an experience, or they've had both.
Yeah. And, you know, and I have to say, because of you know, the shows like Ancient Aliens as well as all the different radio shows, you know, like mine, where we bring all these different people who are contactees and experiencers, you know, as well as, you know, people who've authored books, you know, to share the information because they think that, you know, you're absolutely right. I've been saying it for years that, you know, disclosure is right in front of us. We're seeing it take place. You know, you're not paying attention if you don't figure it out. I mean, if you just keep record of the amount of sightings
around the world that take place on a daily basis, it's overwhelming.
Well, it is also a paradigm. Let's say you say a prayer, okay? You want to pray for something, and you're asking the universe, God, he, she, it, call it what you will, or you're making a petition or some affirmation. But see, the thing is that then you have to be open to how the prayer will be answered. So you may be looking for it to come in a pink box, but the universe comes sends it in a blue box, and you go, my prayer wasn't answered. Of course it was answered. But you have to look for the signs that come to you. And, you know, and this is news to people. But it's an exciting time to be alive. It's an exciting time to be on planet Earth. There's a birth of a new consciousness. Of course, we have the Ukraine, and we have Syria, and we have all these hot spots. And you know, one doesn't want to be an ostrich about that. But it's also the birth of a new consciousness. I mean, Japan just outlawed killing the whales. France has outlawed fracking. The American public responded to Donald Sterling's comments, the owner of the NBA team Los Angeles Clippers. I mean, people's consciousness is starting to evolve. It's starting to change. And we're right in the midst of it. So it's the best of times, and it's the worst of times in some ways. But it's a beautiful time to be on planet Earth. And what's the, I don't know if you've read Lieutenant Corso, the late Lieutenant Corso's book, The Day After Roswell. And he asks one of the E.T. brothers, what's in this for us? What are you giving us? And do you recall, remember the response that the brother said? He said, a new world, if you can take it. I love that. I love that. I love that line. We're bringing you a new world if you can take it. I think we can.
Well, okay, you know, yeah. I mean, but we look at the, you know, yeah, it has been a very eye-opening time. People are opening up to the new thought process and things that they could never imagine before, had only seen on TV, are now experiencing. So it is a change of consciousness. But at the same time, you know, it seemed like our government kind of, you know, kicked in as well, because for all these years, you know, they have been vehemently saying that there's absolutely no such thing as any of this phenomena. And as the shift is coming along, I think that we're starting to see a lot more sightings, but I think a lot more of the sightings are our own governmental craft that have just been back engineered, you know, to kind of, you know, trick us on all this. So if we're going to start to shift our consciousness, they're trying to kind of, you know, circumvent it. And
yeah, but that's what everybody does all through history. That's not a bad thing. That's kind of natural. You have people that are going to hold on to an old paradigm.
Gotcha.
You're always going to have that. You know, it's not going to just come in on the, as Dr. King would say, on the wheels of inevitability. There's always going to be that struggle. And so what if they back engineer? It's not so much about the technology. It's about the spirituality behind it. And no lie, as King says, no lie lives forever. And so it's not just so much about the technology. Yes, that's there. But it's the spirituality behind it. At least the beings that I've been in contact with, that's what they say. The toughest thing for them to get through to us is to get past our fear and to get past this whole addiction to the technology. I mean, if what Laura Eisenhower says, the great-great-granddaughter of Dwight Eisenhower, if what she says is true, where we were given a choice, and the choice was we don't want to disarm and get rid of our nuclear weapons because it's a fearful world, or for whatever reason, I'm glad I wasn't put in that position if indeed that story is true. But basically they were telling us your spirituality has not caught up with your technology, and so you are dangerous not only to each other but to the galaxy itself. But of course, there's always going to be that. whether it was Gandhi or Jesus or Buddha, there's always going to be opposites that are like, we don't want to get rid of this paradigm. But that doesn't mean the paradigm doesn't shift.
Right.
It just means that it takes time. Human evolution takes time.
Yeah. It's like it's growing pains is what we're going through.
It's exactly what it is. It's growing pain.
Yeah, because we're trying to get over our infancy to grow into maturity, and we're talking about a spiritual way. We have a lot of technology and everything, but how do we handle it in a mature way rather than acting like we would be in our infant state, you know, just trying out new things and not knowing how to control it. So it takes
the stakes are high.
Yeah,
the stakes are high, yeah. But I mean, and Christine, believe me, I'm not trying to make light of what you're saying, but so what that they back engineer? Why not? That's what they want to do. But there's a price to pay.
Right. Do you think that's for a fear factor more so?
Of course it's fear. I mean, it's work, you know, what's the old adage? And I don't believe in a devil, but the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. There's a lot at stake in this present paradigm. People are making money. We don't want to know anything about free energy because Exxon and Shell, et cetera, free energy is going to take money out of their pockets.
Right.
So we use the technology. We back engineer stealth bombers. We make drones with the technology. We use it to make money. We don't use it for the solar power that we could have or more earth-friendly technologies. We don't do that. We don't use the knowledge maybe to cure diseases. I mean, if these beings can come from either another dimension or another planet, they have great knowledge. Maybe
right.
They have some cures for cancer, or maybe they can show us what we can do with diabetes. But do you know what? If I'm a healer. If I put my hands on a couple people and their cancer went away, do you think I'd be rewarded for that? Or do you think I'd have some lawsuits against me, or there people would find a way to, because I'm taking money out of people's pockets. I mean, cancer is a big business.
Right. Right, absolutely.
You see, when I was working at a hospital in New York as a chaplain, there was a gentleman there who was a healer as well, and he was an evangelical Christian and very enthusiastic about his faith, and he was a custodian. And he put his hands on someone who had stage 4, I don't forget where the cancer was, and he prayed over them and touched them, and they got better. And he was fired.
Wow.
They fired him for doing that. Now, not let's talk to him. Let's study. Let's find out what's going on. They fired him.
Right. Absolutely. That's crazy. I mean, I could see why they would do that. I mean, of course, they don't want people knowing that there's actually people out there that can heal you without traditional medicine or Western medicine.
Right.
But we know for a fact, just by looking through history, you know, humanity's been around for a very long time and survived through all kinds of illnesses and things like that, all before pharmaceuticals were, you know, the way we know it, the big pharmaceutical companies were ever around.
Yeah.
But yet they won't let us go back to, you know, going to a more natural state of doing it, because like as you said, Reverend Carter, that's going to, the amount of money that would take out of these big businesses' pockets.
I mean, these pharmaceutical companies are, you know, they're very clever. I mean, everything's a disease. You know, now acid reflux is a disease. Acid reflux is not a disease. It's a symptom. It's not a disease. Cancer is a disease. Acid reflux, you take some apple cider vinegar and some water, and you drink it.
Right.
It takes the acid off your stomach. It's counterintuitive, but it's a disease. But if everything's a disease, then I can sell my products.
Right.
You see?
Right.
And they're very powerful. Mm-hmm. Very, very powerful. And so, and I'm not saying get rid of Western medicine. Please, for listeners out there, not saying that at all. Western medicine has saved my life on many occasions. But I am mm-hmm. saying that it doesn't have to be the first thing we reach for. Maybe we can use both Western medicine
right.
and more natural medicines. But anyway, that's a whole other topic. But we're evolving. I think we are. I think it's, yes, the earth is heating up. And, we got a lot on our plate. And human beings, you know, we're going to have to grow up and come to grips with a lot of things. I know I'm one of these people that, listen, just like they're more evolved human beings and less evolved human beings, they're more evolved off-world intelligences and they're less evolved. I'm not saying that everyone that comes here wants to sing Kumbaya with us. Not saying that at all. I'm not that naive. But I am saying that we have a habit of painting everything with a large brush. So they are evil, or those grays are bad, or those reptilians. I mean, we do that with each other around issues of race, homosexuality, Tea Party, liberal. I mean, we really paint with broad strokes. I mean, a lot of people are finding out that all ETs don't have pear-shaped heads and Ray-Ban eyes. Some of them look quite human. And so, but we don't want, at least in our culture, a lot of these Nordic-looking brothers and sisters, a lot of them are seen in Europe, but people, they are being seen here, but the stereotype is a little 3 to 4 foot tall, kind of gray, broad brother, sister here. But, the government doesn't want you to know that a lot of these beings look human because they could be in the White House. You could walk
right.
by one of these people on the street and not even know who they were. Well, probably from the vibration, the energy they would give off. But it's to keep the fear going. You know, they look other. You know, they're the other. That's not going to last long either. That's not going to last. People are getting tired.
Yeah, once it's out, going to be out is going to be pretty hard at that point then to finally have proof that, you know, say one species of alien exists out there and not think that there couldn't be more, because once you kind of shatter that possibility, which, yeah. to be absolutely honest, to me has always been kind of just so perplexing to me, because when you look at, you know, as a world, you know, we have, you know, so many, you know, different, you know, male, female, we're different, you know, races, religions, you know, all different things. With as many different, you know, races of human beings as we have on the world, how in the world could we think that, number one, that we could be the only species in the whole universe that would be out there, that, you know, we just happy, you know, our world is just that one that got, you know, that had something, and not think that there could be things unlike us. But I think that since we have so many horror films and films showing, you know, aliens coming to do horrible things to the humans, it, you know, that's really all people really have it to base it on, unless they have a personal experience themselves. And even that varies on how that goes, because some people have contact that is, you know, a very peaceful and a lot of information is given when the contact, and then there are others that do not have any pleasant feelings about the interaction whatsoever. So do you think that, especially like with our television and our social media and everything going the way it is, do you think it kind of, is it hindering or helping disclosure movement?
I think it's doing both. It's helping because it's getting people acclimated to the very real possibility and now fact that there is other life in the universe. it's hindering because it's making them hostile to us. And we know that everyone who comes here is not going to be as gentle as Spielberg's being in E.T., you know, E.T.
Right.
But we also, you know, there's always the middle ground, as the Buddhists say. And it's all about fear. And if I can keep you in fear, I can control you.
Right.
And that's what this is about. And as other genuine spiritual paths talk about, whether it's A Course in Miracles or, you know, any other genuine spiritual path, it's you have two choices in life. You have love and you have fear. And each day, each moment, you get to choose which one of those you're going to serve. But even Ray Charles could have seen that to keep us in fear, that's what the media does for the most part, you know. And the thing is to wake up from that fear and to get in touch with, well, if you want to call it God or whatever one wants to call it, non-God, but to get through to the core of who you really are and how powerful we really are. But that's that struggle, because you have these other energies, you know, telling you you're not good enough. You know, you turn on your television and Madison Avenue is constantly saying, get this car, buy this product, use this toothpaste. You want to get a date, you want to get laid, buy this perfume, buy these clothes. We're constantly being told that we're not enough as we are.
Yeah.
We're lacking. We're consumers. What a horrible name to tell someone, to call someone. It's like you're Godzilla. I've come to Earth to consume. We're not consumers. We're co-creators.
Right.
Exactly.
But and sometimes we have to unlearn things. And when you've been taught since the time you came to planet Earth, I'll shut up because I hear my brother wants to say something. You know, it's hard to unlearn that.
Yeah. People have to realize that the true beauty is within. And, you know, it's,
yes,
you know, it's a spiritual movement toward one another. When I look at people, I see everybody as a whole, not you know, whether they're black, Chinese, Mexican, I don't care. As long as they're people,
yeah,
and they're truly to who they are. And that's what God sees us. He sees us as his children. And, you know, the whole this fear, and that's what prejudice is, because it's just basically a fear. But once you get to know other people and learning about them face to face, you realize, well, we're all the same, really. You know, so.
Yeah.
That goes the same. But the extraterrestrial life, you know, they're very interested in mankind. They want us to grow and be a part of the galactic community. So it's just a matter of getting
out
of fear.
Some do. Some do. I don't know if all do, but I know some do. But you know, and fear, it doesn't mean we're human beings. We all have our biases and prejudices, okay?
Right.
The thing is that to be aware of them and not to let them get in the way. I mean, if you saw me, you would see, you know, I had really long dreadlocks. I cut them. They're growing back. I'm a copper-colored man. I'm 6 feet. I mean, you would see me. You see me. I'm a man. Okay. You will see. That's a man of color. You, of course. Just like if I saw an Asian or someone. And that doesn't mean I don't see difference. It just means that I don't let my fear of differences get in the way of my interactions. I have many people say to me, I don't see you as a color. Well, then you're blind.
Yeah.
Right,
but I know what they're saying. What they're saying is, I don't let that get in the way. But I want you to see that I'm different. I want to see if you're Native American or if you self-identify as gay or what have you. I want to see that beauty in you. I'm not going to say, well, I don't see my friend is blonde, blue-eyed. Oh, I don't see color. I don't see you as blonde, blue-eyed. That's dishonest. Of course you see it. But you see beauty. or even if you don't see beauty, you don't let that stand in the way of us reaching out to each other. That's what this is about. I mean, all these races, man, all these races, the praying mantis, the Palladians, the reptilians, the grays, you know, you see all that. I mean, these are different races.
Mm-hmm.
They're different races coming here.
Right, right.
You know,
because
just,
the universe
like,
is full of different races.
You know,
now,
all of them
don't want to shake your hand, I can tell you.
Right.
But all human beings don't want to shake your hand.
Well, that's what I was going to say, too. I mean, we look at human beings, and I mean, we fight all the time, and I know that a lot of the media will try to, you know, keep in the limelight, you know, race wars between certain, you know, races, things like that. But I mean, it is no difference. I mean, there are people out there who are going to get along, and there are going to people who are going to, you know, be violent and not get along. And I mean, it's been this way through history. Why would it be any different?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and I, you know, when I wrote my book, the Bible to me is a precious book of wisdom, telling about our ancestors, telling us about, you know, how to become more human. And, you know, that may be different for other people. I don't want to throw the Bible away or any other of the books that we use, but, you know, I think that a lot of our ancestors are describing in that book contact with off-world intelligences. I really do. I could be wrong, but I'm willing to take, to me it doesn't take away from it at all. If anything, it enhances because, you know, as we go along through the Old Testament to the Second Testament, we call the New Testament, you know, the message becomes more and more about love, loving the neighbor. How do we do justice and love mercy and walk with our God, if you will, to use the quote from Micah. And so it's a very powerful book, as is the Quran, which is very interesting because the same characters are in that are in the Quran are in, of course, the First and Second Testaments. And whether you're a person of the book, you know, Judaism, Islam, or Christianity, or our Aboriginal brothers and sisters, our First Nations people here, all of them have these stories about beings coming down from the sky and beginning civilization.
Right.
I have Cherokee blood, so the Cherokees talk about the Palladians who come down. But there's always these off-world intelligences, and that fascinated me. And when I started having my own contacts, I'm not a big technological person in the sense of I don't care about so much about propulsion systems and how they fly and back. I don't have that kind of mind. But I'm very interested in, as was John Mack, the late John Mack when he was alive. Of course, I think you know they're going to make a movie out of his life. But, you know, how does that affect us spiritually when you wake up in the middle of the night or you're in your car or wherever and you see a being from another planet and you interact with them? How does that grow your soul? Does it grow your soul? You know, those were the things that interested me, and those were the things that happened to me, which sent me on this quest to write this book and to get on TV and to be on radio and talk about this. I mean, if someone had told me this as a kid, I mean, I'd have said, are you nuts? But here I am at 57 and having an audience for it.
Right. Oh, yeah. And I mean, if
you know,
any time,
it's been a blessing. It really has. It hasn't always. I mean, it has ups and downs, but it's been a blessing. Fortunately, my wife, you know, is supportive and understands. My parents. My daughter was telling me when she was 4 or 5 years old about, you know, Daddy, don't you remember one time you were my mommy and mommy was Daddy? Don't you remember that? I mean, you know, and we encourage that. Yeah, and she told me that she picked us. She said, you had really long hair, Daddy. And she told me this when she was 4. And I said, that's, I want him to be my dada. And she said, and you kissed mommy, and I saw you kissed mommy on the sofa. She said, I was standing right here by this chair. This is what she's telling me. And she said, you didn't see me, but I saw you. And you didn't have a shirt on, and mommy, you were watching TV, and I saw you kiss her, and I liked your hair. And I said, I want to be there. And I listened, and I didn't discourage it because she was telling me about other lives. And then I said to her one day, Kevin, who was with you while you were standing over there? Who were you talking? Who did you tell that you wanted to be here? Because she said she came from a place called the airport. And I said, the airport? She said, yeah, there's souls who come to hear Dada, and then there's souls who leave here. And I said, well, who were you with? She said, a space person. She said, a space man. And I said, really? She said, yeah. I told the spaceman that I wanted to be with you and mommy this time. But don't you remember, Dada? And so, I mean, out of the mouth of babes.
Right.
My daughter's 8 years old.
That's powerful.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I have four children myself, and, you know, I've experienced paranormal activity and been able to, you know, be and interact with spirits my whole life. So my reality, you know, just like with yours, was very different than, you know, most. It is a very strange place to be. But we do see, you know, a change. We are seeing so many more people coming out and talking about their experiences. And I think that that in itself, number one, you know, these radio shows, I know just ours alone, and I host three shows in total, but all of them have just, you know, been going crazy with, you know, the topics. There is an audience, and there are people that are just waiting to hear the next show and, you know, the next amount of information, or they can, you know, say, hey, I want to hear about this topic, and then I find the guest to give them that information. And it's just, I think that we are definitely, whatever's coming, I think it's the time that we've been waiting for a very long time. It's going to happen, it'll be now.
Yeah, and so you are doing a good, you are doing a service because you're giving people the platform to tell these stories. So you are the harbinger. That's the word I'm looking for, of a new world. You are helping the paradigm because you're giving a voice to people who are voiceless. You are giving a platform for folks to get up and say, this is what's happening to me. I'm not crazy. I get up every day. I want to go to work. I'm in a relationship, or I'm not. I'm a human being. I'm trying to be more loving. I'm trying to be more forgiving. I'm just trying to make a life here on planet Earth. And you give us people like you, George Noory, you know, Ancient Aliens. We could go on and on and on. This is the platform, and it changes consciousness. And as Victor Hugo said, no, you know what? There's nothing as powerful as an idea whose time has come.
Wow.
There's nothing as powerful as an idea whose time has come.
Wow. And how old were you when you had your first contact?
Well, I'm terrible at math, but my first contact as an adult was December 28, 1989. I was coming back from the pyramids in Chichen Itza and Tulum at the Yucatan. But when I was a kid, now looking back, of course, my regressions with Bud Hopkins and with the late Gene Mundy, both stellar individuals, you know, I was seeing these little balls of light in my room, these spheres in my room, beings, you know, waking up with blood on my pillow, those types of things, scars on my body. But my first contact of seeing, and I'm assuming it was a man, I don't want to appear sexist, but I assumed it was a man, was when I got back from Mexico that night, and I woke up, and my room was full of this light. It was a blue light around the individual, like a cobalt blue, and there was a being on the edge of my bed with a aluminum foil tight-fitting jumpsuit. He was not gray. He was chalk white. He had the pear-shaped head and the wraparound kind of Ray-Ban eyes. I could tell he was short, and I thought I was going to have a heart attack. And it looked at me, or he looked at me. I don't want to refer to him as things. And I looked at him, and I just pulled the cover up over my head. That's how frightened I was. And I heard this whoosh, whoosh, and the temperature changed, and it was freezing out that night. I had come from a party that evening, and I wanted to kind of show off my tan because it was like 88, 85 degrees in Mexico. When I came back to New York, it was in the 20s. And so I kind of wanted to gloat, but I felt like I was outside. And, you know, to my mind, I mean, I'm in my bed, but I feel like I'm outside. But when I pulled my covers down, no one was there. And I was in my room. I was wide awake. This didn't happen when I was asleep. And then every 6 to 8 months after that, they would come. Well, it was like it was every full and new moon. I could almost tell when they were coming. You know, they were coming. And then when they came, they would paralyze me. See, I would be paralyzed. I couldn't move. I don't know whether that was for their protection or mine. But I would be wide awake. Wide awake. I saw a reptilian being walked through my wall. On the 15th floor of the Excelsior Hotel at 45 West 81st Street in New York City. Walked through my wall. Beautiful. Scared the bejesus out of me. But beautiful. I mean, scaly with like alligator skin. Had these beautiful yellow eyes that cats have where the pupils are vertical instead of horizontal. Talk to me, male voice. And when it left, went through my wall. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Now, do you think, again, I mean, the obvious thing would be the fact that, you know, again, all of these things to us in the media are portrayed as something bad, something evil. And so, of course, when we see something like this for the first time, that's where our brain almost kind of goes directly to, and we go right into that straight fear factor.
Well, see, I didn't go. Well, no, it was for me. No, I don't think that's always true, Christine. I was afraid because my doors were locked, my windows were locked, and someone was in my room. And they didn't look like me. Now, I couldn't judge whether they were good or bad. And Shakespeare says nothing is good or bad, but thinking makes it so. I wasn't even going there. I was numb and in shock that you just came through my wall. How did you get in here? Why is my room? I hadn't even gone to the judgment yet.
Right.
And I've had some weird things of high strangeness happen to me, but I can tell you that once I got over my fear, and I don't mean that I don't have fear when they come. I just don't have that terror I had because I'm kind of used to it. But it's not so much that. It's how do I live my life after that? I live my life much less fearfully. I am more open. I was pretty effusive anyway about saying if I let people know when I love them, I'm not afraid to say I'm sorry. I'm easier to forgive. Now, I'm not saying that everybody has to have somebody come from another dimension to tell you that. I'm not saying that. You can learn those things on your own. I'm just saying that my spiritual growth was accelerated. I'm much more self-reflective. It's much more easier for me to say I'm sorry. It's much more easier for me to love. And they had something to do with that. I had to do the work. I had to go to therapy when I first saw them. And then when I was having problems in my relationships, I went to that. I had to do the footwork, but I was more open to life, and I was more open to possibilities, much more than I'd ever been before.
Right.
And that was the gift. That's been the gift for me of these contacts. And I consider these the ones that come to me, I consider them my friends. I consider them friends.
is that because, you know, now through therapy and everything now that you understand about or that you're not so fearful about, is that why you think, when they first came, did you feel that they were your friends? I mean, did you have a negative
The only thing I was the fear of seeing something like that that didn't look like me. And that's natural. I didn't walk away from them saying they were evil.
Right.
I could have. I mean, they had done some things to me, shooting things at me out of their hands to help my healing ability, my psychic ability improve. Having certain things, I had a needle stuck in the top of my crown, and in the back of my head, where your neck meets the top of your brainstem, the bottom of your brainstem. I mean, because it's not about all that. It's about how I walk through the world after that.
Wow.
I know people who go to church every Wednesday night for Bible study. They're in church on Sunday, or they go to the mosque or the synagogue, and they're the most hateful people you'd ever want to meet. So I know what you believe by how you treat me.
Right, right. Right.
So even after these experiences, the way I try to interact with my fellow men and women is from a place of authenticity and a place of love. And that doesn't mean I let people walk all over me. It doesn't mean I'm holier than thou. I have problems. I get angry. I do things. But I'm much more self-aware.
Right.
And I take more responsibility for my life. And not all of that, but much of that is from, there's something humbling when you realize, when you see beings who are much more powerful than you. And in some cases, much more loving.
Very, very true.
You know,
very true.
You look at some of these beings that have this, various powers of, you could say, call it gifts, too. But, you know, when you see things like that, it is very humbling. And you look at some of these ones that have come to show you something, perhaps teach you something, and even that is a humbling experience to have happened to you. And also, it's another way of that you're being taught from above that there is more than just life down here.
I agree. I mean, and you know, I may go to a class and or to a workshop or something. But I mean, you know, that's just the way that they've changed me. I'm much less. How can I say? I'm much less invested in being right. Now, part of that comes with age, hopefully, but not with everybody. But I didn't come to this planet to be right. I came to this planet to learn to love, to learn to have some semblance of peace. And so, they taught me how to look at my ego and how to see where that's getting in your way. You know, that's getting in your way. Some people call it sin, but call it what you will. I had a friend talk about the ego was edging God out, if you will. But it was about, I want to be right. And I realized I live on a planet where everybody wants to be right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly. And it doesn't mean that much to me anymore to be right. If I wanted to be right, I'd be arguing with people that didn't happen to you, or don't you think this? No, I don't even go there. Listen, I'm just telling you my story. You don't have to believe it. Or you may have a different story. But I'm not saying I never want to be right. Don't get me wrong. But I'm much more aware of it. Michael, is this worth it?
Right.
What's this really about? This is about you wanting to be right. And it's not about that. I didn't come all the way to this planet to be right. There's much more to life than that.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
but I had to put in the work, I had to put in the work.
Right. Well, how was it for you, though, you know, all those years, you know, in college, studying the Bible, and where there isn't a lot of talk or interaction when it comes to, you know, alien races, when you had your own experience, I mean, how drastically did that, like, change you? Because,
it changed
me. It's making you question everything,
well,
right?
Yes, but remember, you're right, Christine, and there was that tug of war for a while. But remember, the Bible has been used. You can look at the, you can use the Bible for anything. You can use
right.
the Bible. It was used to keep people in slavery. It was used to keep women marginalized. It's being used now to keep a gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender brothers and sisters out of the mainstream. I mean, the Bible, you can use it for anything. But what I never lost sight of was, okay, what is the bottom line? The bottom line was that if the old, you know, the 8th century, 5th century, 8th century prophets, they talked about Amos, Jeremiah, Ezekiel. They were talking about how do we do justice. Dr. Cornel West was famous for saying that love is justice made public. And then Jesus comes along as a Jewish man, and he says, okay, Moses told you A, B, C, D, our ancestors. He said, but now you got to bring your A game, because now not only are we going to talk about justice, but we're going to talk about love. Well, we're going to talk about love. So now we're going to turn it up a notch. And I just, whether it came from ETs or whether it came from human beings, that to me was the message of the Bible. Now, it was not all loving. David kills Bathsheba's husband because he lusts for her. We have Cain and Abel. We have, of course, the crucifixion. I mean, we could got studies. We got stories out of there. But basically, the book is telling you this is how you treat your neighbor, and this is how you love. Because if you remember the story of the Exodus, and we can get into, in the second hour, we can get into the UFO sightings and what have you, my interpretation. But those Ten Commandments, there were 613 in the beginning. Those Ten Commandments were only for the Jews. They were only for the Hebrew people. They weren't for because, remember, they go into the land of Canaan, and they kill all the Canaanites, men, women, and children.
Right.
So what happened to thou shalt not murder? Because it wasn't thou shalt not kill, it was thou shalt not murder in the original Hebrew.
Right.
What happened there? So the Yahweh was saying, you don't do that to each other. I don't want you to intermarry with those Gentiles. I don't want you to intermarry with the uncircumcised one. Those are the dirty ones. You don't want to be like the Goyim. Okay? But that was not, his message was not love for everybody. It was that you will be my people and I will be your God. But those Canaanites, those Jebusites, those people with the land flowing with milk and honey, now you see why a lot of Native Americans have a problem with some of our biblical teachings. Because that story is the story that happened to them. The Hebrew people came into Canaan and said, God said we could have this land. This is our land. And they took it. By slaughter. Well, welcome to America.
It's been like
so that story had to be spun a certain way. And as you go along in the Old Testament, Micah talks about how do we do justice. Jeremiah goes, I mean, these pharaohs and kings did not want to see these prophets coming because, you know, here comes Christine again. She's going to tell me what the Lord's telling me I'm doing wrong again. I'm sick of seeing Christine come in here. Now, of course, they were women prophets. You don't hear much about them. But of course they were. And if I'm the Pharaoh, if I'm the king, I don't want to see you coming because you're going to give me bad news and tell me what I should be doing. So a prophet didn't have a long life all the time.
Right.
And then when Jesus comes along, he says, okay, I'm going to add some new commandments here. I'm going to bring, this is about love. This is about love, even when people are wronging you. You love them. Not a kumbaya kind of fuzzy, wispy kind of love, but the love that says, you are a child of God, as I am a child of God. And you may forget who you are. and you may be hateful and spiteful to me, but I'm going to try and keep seeing you as who you really are, even when you forget, and hopefully you'll do that to me.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of love to forgive people that would nail you to a piece of wood.
Oh,
it takes a lot of love to do that, a lot of forgiveness.
Absolutely.
It takes a lot of love to when people are throwing rocks at you until you fall unconscious. Because, I mean, this is barbaric, is it not? Who thinks of these things? Well, the Persians came up with crucifixions, and the Romans learned it from them. But it's a dirty business. But, I mean, you know, this is what we're talking about. When Buddha's talking about, you know, don't, you are what you think. It takes love to tell people that.
Wow.
The Mother Teresa's of the world, the Dr. King's of the world, the Joan of Arc's of the world, the Coretta Scott King's of the world.
And now the Reverend Michael Carter's of the world.
Well, maybe one day. but and that's what I'm trying to do. I have the audacity to believe in love. It's dangerous. You see what happened to King and Gandhi. Love is people are afraid.
I don't understand. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's powerful. It's a powerful. Love is powerful because
mm-hmm.
once you know because you, the fear and love can't be in the same room together.
Right.
They can't be in the same room together. And so it doesn't matter if you're Tea Party and I like Obama. Doesn't matter if you're gay and I'm straight. Doesn't matter if you are evangelical and I'm Unitarian Universalist. Those are just labels.
Right.
The thing is to go beyond the labels.
Well, you were talking earlier in the first hour about the Pope coming forward just recently and stating that, you know, if an alien race was to come to the world, that, you know, he would be willing to baptize him.
Yeah,
and
sometimes that's funny. In some ways that's funny to me, but yeah. And it wasn't the first time the Vatican has said anything like that. They've been doing
right.
that a lot of late. But just yesterday, I was like, wow, okay. I mean, that's disclosure.
Right.
It's
subtle,
but he's saying,
is,
yeah.
Right, and I grew up Catholic, so,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I completely understand that now. I'm non-denominational now.
Yeah.
You know, I do believe in a creator.
Yeah.
But a lot of things over time have, my own personal experiences have really truly made me question a lot of the things that I had been taught. And so I was all about, you know, trying to go and find this myself.
You're a psychic,
aren't
that,
you? Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay, I thought so.
Yeah, and, you know, living that way for so long and not being able to talk about it, you know, kind of living in this reality where you know things that other people do not believe in do exist.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I wasn't crazy. I knew what I was experiencing.
Yes.
Didn't understand why other people were not experiencing it or did not know what I was talking about, but I knew without a shadow of a doubt, you know, that I knew what I was experiencing and seeing. So, you know, and now kind of seeing the change, you know, here's a question for you, because I, growing up, had always seen UFOs. I mean, actually quite often. And along with the paranormal stuff, it within my research, I started to see a lot of connections between the two. And I've had some really absolutely crazy things happen throughout my lifetime and very strange experiences. But do you think that there is a connection? Because I definitely do feel that I have had contact. And I don't know that it has anything to do with it, but I'm starting to see a lot more over the years, especially like over the last 20, is that, you know, speaking to people who have paranormal activity, people who are experiencing abduction, you know, the evidence and the reporting crossing each other, and people are experiencing some of both. You know, they start out having, you know, paranormal activity, and then they start having UFO contact and or alien contact. So do you think that there is some kind of tie between the two?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we call paranormal may be just laws of physics that we haven't known about yet. That's
right.
What I think that is. So, what we call supernatural may not be supernatural at all. It's just that we haven't discovered, quantum physics is really helping with all of that. But it's just stuff that we're not privy to. And so when I see someone walk through my wall, the first thing, of course, is, the fear or what's going on.
Right.
But when I realize, and like Einstein said, that everything is energy, and so the stuff that we think is solid is not really solid. And so when someone walks through the wall, they've mastered the laws of physics.
Right.
And so we just haven't done that yet. And so it's not so much of a mystery. When I look at Jesus, and if I say that Jesus was a hybrid and that he had contact with off-world intelligences, at least, then things make a lot of sense to me. And then I start saying, okay, that with my own spirituality, and it may not even be in this lifetime, but it's nothing I have to be afraid of with these great mysteries. Oh, this is mystical woo-woo. This is science. We just haven't gotten there yet, you see. I mean,
right.
When Jesus is walking along the road from he's eating. After the crucifixion, he has a meal with some of his disciples. That's not a ghost. That's a human being. Ghosts don't have to have
right.
fish. Yeah. So I think that they are, in many cases, they may be one and the same. But they are different in ways, too. But I don't know. I mean, if there's life after life, which we know there is, and we know that energy doesn't die, it just transforms.
Right.
Well, if you see the spirit or ghost of someone else, why would that be not natural? If they're not dead, their body's dead, but energy doesn't die.
Sure.
So that's the way I look at those things. And we just haven't come collectively to a place where we can all acknowledge that. I mean, I know people who say they don't believe in life after death, but they're very scientifically minded. But again, if energy doesn't die, then why would a person die?
But again, something with it, I think, is that even for many people, it's like we're so conditioned to believe what we've been taught. And
that's my
don't believe
point,
anything else until we have our own personal experience. And then
yeah.
That's why I think when we experience it and it's so, extreme, it like shakes our world, because I know that growing up, I was always afraid of dying, because in the Catholic religion, you're always told that, like the day you die, you're going to go to the gates and, you're going to have to, answer for every bad thing you've ever done. And they're going to have a list of all the good things you've done. And hopefully it outweighs the other so you can go through the pearly gates. Right. So I was always so afraid of death, I swear. And I, of course, being very inquisitive and on top of it, having psychic abilities. And now, mind you, I'm 47. So at the
oh,
time of being a child,
why are you
I am. Yeah, so by the time that, I was going through that, it wasn't a time where you could be very vocal about having those abilities, especially not in the Catholic Church. So, I was known, for kind of my antics, because I was always talking about spirits or UFOs and like trying to convince the nuns and the priests that they actually existed. And they really got quite perturbed with me all the time. So I always questioned everything. And when I 12 years ago, I was in a very bad car accident and I had a near-death experience. And I will tell you that it really shook me completely. I mean, if my reality wasn't, blown before, it definitely was then, but it definitely changed everything about how I felt. And the information that it was just like, okay, I now I understand. I understand what I'm supposed to, you know, be doing. And it was kind of an amazing thing. But I do think for so many people, it actually takes experience until they're like, oh, my gosh. And I think that that's why if, you know, say a UFO was to land somewhere, right, and there was no doubt, it was no shaky video, and, you know, it was on all, and especially if it hit all the, you know, mainstream media, then everybody would believe it, of course. But if you saw a UFO go down, you know, land somewhere, and you know, they get it all over, you know, the news, people would, you know, their minds would be blowing. Like, I don't think that they would really know how to really grasp it. But then I think that, on the other hand, you have a whole lot of people that have always kind of known, and they're like, yeah, you know, like, okay, now we finally, you'll finally believe us. Where do you think that ratio is now?
Well, like I said at the beginning of the show, you know, 48%, 50% of the American people believe in life on other planets.
That's it.
It's huge. And, I mean, you can Google it, you can check. And so the ratio has changed. I mean, there was a, you, if you can still get it on YouTube, they took it down, but someone put it back up. There was this, this was at the beginning of the situation in the Ukraine. There was a huge cigar-shaped craft that was shown by MSNBC, so it was on the media, mainstream media. And people saw this, and it was flying over the Ukraine. Flying over the Ukraine. The world didn't end. The stock market didn't plummet. You know, I mean, people are ready for this. And those who aren't, you know, life doesn't stop to wait for you to get ready. You know, it's a new world if we can take it.
Yeah, and what a different world it could be. You know, I don't understand. Well, I do understand why people have this terrible fear of something that's not from our planet. And the absolute reason is, once again, of the fear of the unknown. Anything that we don't know anything personally about, but yet we trust social media to sway us one way or another. Because, of course, it's like when people will see a news article on the internet, on social media, right away they start Googling all kinds of information to find out if it's true. Because, you know, if they hear something, it could go viral very quickly. So I think that with, you know, the stuff, the way it's going, there are so many, you know, and we can definitely talk about this too, but so many new sightings, people having new experiences, contact. And maybe you can answer this, because this is something that I ask just about every guest I've ever had on the show, and you have been an experiencer yourself. A lot of times you will get experiencers who are either have had, like I said, either a very positive, you know, experience, or they've had a very negative experience. And the negative experiences are usually the abductions, where they feel that, you know, they're taken for medical experiments or tests, and then they are returned. And the fear, I feel, comes more so from the fact that, you know, we have been taught to believe that, you know, we have to give our permission for things to happen. Because I look at people that say, like myself, who are ill, and we agree and withstand all kinds of horrific tests and procedures, because we're told by somebody that it's for our benefit. So, you know, if we are contacted by an alien race and stuff is taken, I they have such a negative experience, but do you think that it's just because of the fact that we're taught that if we don't give our, you know, our okay for them to take us, that, you know, that's what leaves the horrible taste in their mouth about it?
No, I don't think there's a formula, and I think the human mind wants to look at formulas. Well, if they did this, then that's why. You know, Kierkegaard, the Christian philosopher Kierkegaard, said that life is not a problem to be solved. Life is a mystery to be lived. And we are very it's very hard for people to live with mystery and to say, I don't know. And sometimes things are just what they are. They just are what they are. I've had a different experience than, let's say, another experiencer, and theirs was negative. And we can speculate about why, but there's no formula. You know why you had that experience? Because you did this. Well, you know why you had a negative experience? Because you look at the world negatively. Do you know why? Sometimes things just are what they are. But what I will say that what's freed me, and maybe it can help others on listening, it may not, I just don't care that much about what other people are thinking. And I don't mean that in a way of I'm a snob or who do. I'm just like, you know, the world will do what the world will do.
Right.
I have
love
to do
what, they want to.
What I have to do.
Right.
And that was freedom for me. That was freedom for me. The government can tell me that it's all swamp gas, and I know that it's different. And I know that how am I going to live after that? People can say they had abductions and bad experiences, and they did. And I'm not here to take that from them. I'm not here to, okay, I'm sorry you had that. And maybe there was some insights you can glean from that. But that's your reality. I can't be responsible for your reality. I can barely be responsible for mine.
Right.
But once you know why you're here, once you know some that you're much more powerful than you think you are, once you know that it really is such a thing as love, and that's really why we're here, all that other stuff really doesn't, that other noise really doesn't, it's nice to talk about, to have a conversation about. But who knows? I don't know why so-and-so... Some gray brothers and sisters, not all, maybe have come to someone and took ovum and sperm and had anal probes. I don't know why that happened. I'm glad it didn't happen to me. But I don't know why that happened. I can be here for you. I can listen. I can walk with you as much as I can with it, but I can't figure that out. I don't know. But in some ways, I don't need to know. All I need to know is that I can be there for you if you want me to be. All I can do is share what I can share with you. And hopefully I can learn from you and you can learn from me. Because you get into the what King called the paralysis of analysis. Where does that lead us? I mean, really, where does that lead us? And in a culture that mistakes wisdom, mistakes information for wisdom, what difference would it really make? Unless the other person can say, this is what happened to me, and I think this is why it happened, and if I can somehow glean something from it and change it, then this will do. That's all you can really do.
Yeah.
But I don't know why some people have abduction experiences and some people have contact experiences. I don't know why some people have sperm and ovum taken and, you know, these horrible things happen and some people don't. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, well, let's be very honest. I mean, for me, I think it's more of just how people relate to it, because I just heard so many different, you know, reportings of different contact, different experiences, and sometimes they started out being very, very fearful of what was going on, but as time went on and they understood more, which is, again, I think is so powerful, is the fact that we fear, you know, what we don't understand. So if something's going on around us and it like doesn't logically make any sense to us, of course we're going to fear it. And I mean, it's just because how we're programmed. That's just how we are. So I think that it's definitely something that if we're getting this information out and it starts to change people where it, at least in a little bit, they start to understand, they, you know, they stop fearing so much. I see so many people who follow all different kinds of religious beliefs, and yet they are so still so worried, especially the very religious, to talk about UFOs, aliens, et cetera. It's as if, you know, it, again, doesn't exist and it's just taboo. Like, how dare, you know, you talk about, you know, God and, you know, ETs in the same
But I will push back a little, Christine, and just being devil's advocate, so what? Everybody
right.
doesn't have to talk about ETs. I mean, you know, I don't have to have – one of the reasons I left my support group in New York, well, it was time to, was because these people couldn't talk about anything but ETs. I mean, there's a whole world out there. And so,
oh, yeah.
and so, you never know. I mean, I don't care if people don't want to talk about ETs or whatever. They don't have to. Doesn't mean they're less open than I am. That's just not where their consciousness is. And so, why not be open to them not wanting to talk about that or not even caring about that? There are so many other things to talk about. And so, and also, it also makes. It's a lesson in acceptance. Just because someone talks about ETs doesn't necessarily mean that they're somehow more enlightened or there's something more about. I can tell you that for sure. But the thing is that you meet people at their map of the world. If they don't want to talk about ETs, that's wonderful. If they do, that's great too.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's because, once again, they've got this fear of...
But what difference... But why not let them have their fear? Too, because see, what happens is, at least in my opinion, is that we get intolerant of intolerance, but we get intolerant, you know, let some people are where they are, and it's okay for them to have their fear. It's okay, you know, not unless that's your mission, you know, but it's okay to have the fear. If I go to a party tomorrow night and I'm having a beer and somehow it comes up and we talk and someone says, well, I don't really believe in that, that's fine. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk
right.
about what you want to talk about. Let's talk about maybe I can learn something. Because otherwise it becomes subtle. It's subtle, but I'm more open because I can talk about these things, but you can't. That's a form of the ego, too. It's just very subtle. I'm open because I can talk about life after to death, and you can't. I'm more open because I don't have the fear of that, but you do. You see, that's just the flip side of it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's just the flip side of ego, and it can be very subtle. But meanwhile, what we're saying is, on some level, I'm a little more evolved than you. Because I have ETs come to me, and I'm not afraid. I'm a little more evolved than you because I had an NDE and you didn't. Now, we may not be saying that verbally, but that's the message. If I meet someone and they don't want to talk about it, which I do all the time, and I don't have to talk about it all the time. Sometimes I don't want to talk about it. And if they don't want to talk about it, that's fine. Let's talk about something else. It's okay. When you get more and more comfortable with who you are, it doesn't matter. You bless them and you wish them well with whatever they do. It's okay to have the fear.
But where do you think that this is going? Okay, say, you know, disclosure does make it full, you know, appearance. And what do you think that does for, you know, structure of religion? I mean, at that point.
Well, the Pope is saying what he's saying, and religion's not falling apart. I think that people will be able to survive it. I used to think that we couldn't. I used to think that Christianity would not be, but no. People would they would reconfigure their paradigm, but I don't think the world would cave in. I think that what's happening is we were told that we were sold a bill of goods. People are more adaptable than we give them credit for. The Pope just came out and said yesterday that it would have nothing to do with our theology and we could bless them. Now, in some ways, that's kind of hubris because they may not need to be blessed by it or want to be blessed. But you didn't hear people running out in the street screaming, oh, my God, the Pope said that. I mean, people went to work today.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
They went to work today.
It made its rounds on the internet just like just about everything else does. And then
yesterday's news. People moved on.
We really have evolved, you know, to a point where
This is not to say that some people won't have problems. You're never going to get 100% of anything.
Right,
but people will adapt. People will adapt. And so I used to think, oh, God, no, you know, that's going to happen. And who was it? Ted Peters wrote a book years ago called Chariots of the Gods, God's Chariots, Flying Saucers. Now, he's got a new book out, still called God's Chariots, but it's about it's God's Chariots, Ancient Aliens, and what have you. And he had done a poll. There was an article, too. You may be able to Google it. Just Google Ted Peters and UFOs. And he said he did a survey. And he said, people who were Christian or whatever. And he said most people, it would not change their theology at all.
So it would just kind of be like, okay, it's just another group that we didn't know at the time.
We would adapt. Maybe we'd have to look at Jesus a different way. Maybe we'd have to look at it wouldn't be the collapse of Western civilization. The things that would be the collapse, that would collapse or have a big problem would be Wall Street.
Right.
You know, when disclosure comes, you don't want to have your money in certain places. Okay.
Right.
If you are in a technology industry, okay, though they may have some problems for all the obvious reasons.
Right.
But it's not the doom and gloom.
Yeah, I think that you have.
It gets to the point where
people
are thinking to themselves, like, oh, I get it. You know, kind of, when they start to see all these things come to play and, you know, that, okay, extraterrestrials are real. They've been visiting for a long time and it's not as bad as I thought it was. Oh, I get it.
You're going to have. You'll have reactions, people saying, well, I've been lied to, or maybe, you know, I've been ridiculed, or someone in my family was. And of course, some people have lost their lives talking about this. Those things are going to be more in the forefront, okay, because there's going to have to be some explanations. But I don't think that we would have the chaos that we do have. But I know most of our conversation has been about, you know, the fear-based and all that. But I want to leave listeners, you know, not we still have another 30 minutes or whatever, but I'm trying to leave listeners to get past that fear.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
To get to and but not I don't want to contradict what I said before. I'm talking about that we own our own stuff. Don't worry about your neighbor in that sense. They have their own spiritual growth to do. But the way you live your life will be the great example for people to follow.
Mm-hmm.
What should people do that they can do right now, changes that they could do right now that would help?
To get up in the morning and see the beauty that is around you. To show some gratitude. Your life may not be exactly as you want, but I know me. I'm working at this church. I was working as a chaplain, and I left there, and I lost about $20,000 in salary, and I'm making it on $20,000 less. But I have my own apartment. I have 2-bedroom apartment here. I have a car. It's a 2007 Sonata. I have some clothes I wear, I have a gym membership. If I went to Haiti, I'd be Donald Trump. So whenever I start getting caught up into, boy, I got all these bills and what have you, yeah, I do, but I can pay them. I pay them. But I can do pretty much what I like to do. I take a vacation a year with my family, you know. So I mean, my life is good. No, I don't live like Denzel Washington. I don't have that much money, but my life is good, and I am grateful for that. I'm grateful for the people who have supported me. And that doesn't, you don't have to have somebody come from Zeta Reticuli to tell you that. It sure helps, you know, because life is, you know, to meditate more. You don't have to sit with your legs crossed, to sit and contemplate, to be quiet, to spend more time in nature.
Yes.
These are things we can do.
I agree with that.
And guess what? The price is right. They don't cost any money.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think meditation, of all things, not only awakening, but just the calmness that you can bring above your surroundings. It's, for me, it was from the very, very, very young age, I would just sit in absolute silence and meditate. Didn't even back then, didn't even know what meditation was, but it was just kind of a very natural way for me. I think that a lot of people kind of got away because from that, you know, so many people, you know, will say, you know, like with people with psychic abilities that, you know, that they were, you know, chosen by God to have these abilities. And I completely disagree because they think that we are all, you know, born with these abilities. And, you know, it's very natural, but we've just been, for so long, we have been trained so that anybody that, you know, disagrees, we just kind of get them out of the picture. So the majority's, you know, thought process wins on things. So, but I definitely think that we're seeing a shift, especially over probably the last couple of years. We're now really starting to get some really, really good movies out there, and documentaries about the field, about the phenomena. And so many more people are coming forward. I mean, I've been doing this show here for about a year now, I guess, or a little over a year. And like I said, I mean, the listeners, they jump every week. And it's just amazing the amount of people that are willing now to come and talk about this. And so many shows out there, you know, before we only had, like, you know, George Norrie, you know, Coast to Coast with George Norrie, or we had, you know, certain shows, but we didn't have the abundance of information like we do now. So we see people all the time talking, interacting, sharing stories, sharing information, sharing the information that they received from these alien beings. I mean, it's a lot of information, and I think that it's definitely time we shift and we start, you know, realizing that this is not science fiction. You know, it's
yeah,
a reality.
Can I, speaking of sharing, a couple of things I'd like to share, because we've forgotten. First of all, a lot of them like to be called star people. It's
okay.
Just something derogatory about aliens. I'm just putting it out there because, you know, we have human beings that don't want to be called aliens. The second thing is I just wanted to tell people a little bit about where they could get the book because I wanted to talk
absolutely,
about it.
Yes.
Yeah, you can go to Amazon.com. It's Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials, and the Holy Bible by Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. It's like $9.89. For the paperback, the Nook or Kindle is $4.99. It's number one on Amazon.
And it's good reading.
Yeah, and thank you. And I'm appearing last night on George Norrie's Beyond Belief. It's the second of a two-part interview on UFOs and religion. The first one aired May 5th, but the other one aired actually yesterday. It's actually airing tonight, I'm sorry. I'm going to be appearing at the ACARE Institute on October 11th to talk about UFOs and the Bible. I've never been to Virginia Beach, so I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, I'm just trying to get the word out. And but I think it's a good read, and you can also contact me at michaeljscarter.com. That's my website. And I blog there, and you can write me and agree or disagree. We don't have to think alike to love alike. But I just wanted to make sure people at least knew where to get the book, how to get the book, and to talk.
Absolutely, and we'll be putting those links up on the Alien UFOs and Beyond Facebook page as well. So
if anybody
wants to check those out, they can go directly to the links that we'll provide. And I actually got a copy to read of the book before I brought Reverend Carter on the show a while back ago, and I'll tell you, it's definitely a must-read. To be honest, I just really want to thank you, Dr. Reverend Carter, for coming on the show because, you know, this is, as I said, it's been a very controversial topic. We've been seeing it over and over where, you know, people who are religious and are having, you know, UFO sightings or contact of any sort are having all kinds of issues. So it's nice to have you and somebody, you know, yourself being an experiencer, you know, as well as very, very well educated, as you can, you know, see from your bio. And you just have the experience to be able to talk to you about, you know, what you experienced.
That's what fascinates me. Do we have time for me to go through some Bible things?
Sure, of course.
I think we're going till 11, right?
Yes.
Okay. I want you, and what triggered me was just what you said about people who are religious and maybe trying to put the pieces together. If we go to the book of Genesis, now, you know, I'm not looking, the King James Version of the Bible is the worst translation you can have because it makes all the characters in the Bible sound like they're speaking Shakespearean English. We know that Jesus spoke, for instance, Hebrew and Aramaic, which is a derivative of Hebrew, and we know that he probably spoke Latin because he spoke to the centurion and healed the centurion's servant. But, you know, I use the Revised Standard Version. I have an Aramaic translation. The Hebrew Bible, I have the English translation of the Torah. But, you know, what's crucial about this, in my mind, for instance, is, you know, we have the Exodus story. Well, no, let me go back to Genesis 6. Genesis 6 says, it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were fair, and so they took them wives of all whom they chose. These are the fallen angels that we hear so much about, sometimes referred to as the watchers. Now, Genesis 6 makes mention of them. I just read the first and second verse, but the first verse. But if you pick up a book called the Book of Enoch, which was taken out of the Bible, it goes into much more detail about who these 200 angels were. Now, they sound extraterrestrial. Angels, it comes from the Greek word angelos, which means messenger. And I want to be clear, I'm not saying angels don't have wings. I've had people get angry with me because they're saying, I'm not saying angels don't have wings. I'm saying that my research has shown me that the angels, our ancestors drew wings on them to let us know that they could fly. And so we go, so that I'm setting the table there. We don't have a lot of time, but pick up the Book of Enoch and also get a good translation of the Bible. So we go to the Exodus story. The Hebrew people are fleeing Pharaoh, and they flee Egypt, okay? We have the Red Sea, the parting of the Red Sea, that kind of thing. And so they follow something in the sky. It's called the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. By day, it had a cloud around it, or it formed a mist. By night, it shone. The pillar of cloud by day, the pillar of fire by night. At night it shone like fire. The Hebrew people follow this craft, and they camp underneath of it, and the next day They move again. This went on for 40 years. This is the definition of a UFO. It stops, it starts, it's intelligently guided. Now, what is crucial or vital about this is that there is no Jewish religion until after the Exodus. There's no such thing as Judaism until after this event. And then you go on to the book of Leviticus. It's a book of laws, dietary restrictions, those kinds of things. Of course, the Ten Commandments, Moses comes down from the mountain. His face is glowing. I happen to think that's radiation. Some people translate it in other ways. So now the Jewish religion starts with after the Passover, okay? The firstborn Egyptians are killed. This is why I say this is not a god. This is an extraterrestrial or the captain of a ship. What kind of god would kill the firstborn child? That's a cruel thing to do.
Right.
It's a cruel
right.
thing to do. Okay, now we have Judaism. Judaism, however, though, what comes out of Judaism? Christianity. Jesus is a Jew. He's a different kind of Jew, but he's a Jew. And, of course, we have Ezekiel going up in the chariot, the spaceships of Ezekiel. We have, and I'm going through this very quickly. There's more in the book about it. But we have Gabriel, these angels coming to Abraham and Sarah. They eat. They tell them they have to get out of Sodom and Gomorrah. These are angels, but they're not flying with wings. We have Ezekiel, who goes up into a craft. We have the book of Enoch, which was taken out of the Bible, but he talks about flying up. His spirit was lifted up by the Lord. He's talking about having an experience. Now, we go to, I'm jumping now. We have about Elijah going up in the chariot, the fiery chariot. So then we go to the New Testament. And the New Testament, we have the wise men following a star. A star does not stop over mangers and shines a light. Now, stars don't do that. If a star moved that way across the heavens, it would disrupt the whole gravitational pull of the earth. You want to talk about earthquakes and tsunamis. But Gabriel comes. And it's interesting because even in the Quran, wherever Gabriel goes, somebody gets pregnant. He's got a good job. Now, most of the women are older, but wherever Gabriel goes, women wind up pregnant. I have yet to understand that, but that's what happens. And Yahweh is always concerned with purity. All the men have to be circumcised. You don't want to intermarry. This guy's got a problem. Everybody's got to be, everything has to be a certain way. So then Jesus comes along. And Jesus says, okay, Gabriel goes to Miriam. That's Hebrew for Mary. Goes to Miriam. Miriam is pregnant, and she's called a virgin. But a virgin doesn't mean that she had her hymen broken, that she had sex. Virgin, the word for virgin in Hebrew is Alma, A-L-M-A. What that means is young girl. Saint Jerome changed that knowingly. That Mary had to be a virgin because Jesus had to be pure. Okay, but Jesus says, my kingdom is not of this world. If your father is not human and your mother is, that means you're a hybrid. There's just no other way to look at that. Okay, if your daddy's not human and your mother is, that means you're not fully human.
Just like if he was a
victim. Yeah, and he says, my kingdom is not of this world. He does these
right.
miracles. Okay, he walks on the water. He changes the water into wine. When he's talking to Pilate at his trial, and he doesn't answer Pilate and John, and Pilate says, are you kidding me, man? I'm the Roman governor. I'm the Roman procurator. You don't speak to me. Don't you know I have the power to put you to death or let you go free? And what does Jesus say? You would have no power over me unless it was given to you from above. If I wanted to, I could call legions of angels here. I mean, those are pretty bold statements. If I wanted to. So don't get too grand. And, but we don't take those things seriously. And then he goes up in a cloud. Okay? It's a lot of people going up and down on clouds. Okay? And so just like we don't say unidentified flying object, we now say UFO. They don't say pillar of cloud by day, pillar of fire by night like they did back in Moses' time. They just say the cloud. He went up on the cloud.
Right. So do you think that it's just how the religion was taught? You know, that's what people have been, you know, preaching for generation after generation to the point that we just believe it because that's the way it was explained and taught to us.
Well, I think it was also we don't want to believe. We just say everything is allegory, or that's, you know, there's an allegory behind that. That's not really what it means. Why is it what it means? That's what they said it meant. And anywhere in the Bible, wherever you see angel, if you put down ET or star person, it sure would make a lot more sense. It sure would make a lot more sense. I mean, in Isaiah chapter 40, there's a verse, chapter 21. It is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers. Okay, I was taught that the earth was flat until Columbus. So Isaiah, writing 5,000 years ago, how did he know that the earth was a circle? It is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers. That sounds like firsthand information. That he's looked down and saw how little or insignificant some of these things looked. Of course, when we go into Amos and Job, in Amos, we hear about the Pleiades. You know, we hear about the Pleiades and Orion. How is Amos, what does he know about the Pleiades?
Exactly.
Okay, in Amos 5, chapter 8, who made the Pleiades and Orion? Who turns deep darkness into dawn and darkens day into night? Who summons the waters of the sea? His name is the Lord. Okay, but what does he know about Orion and the Pleiades?
Right.
Where are they getting that kind of information? I mean, now, granted, the Mayans had it, but where did they get it?
Right, yeah, so everybody had to get it from somewhere.
So it's pretty clear that these are off-world intelligences that are giving this knowledge to our ancestors. Of course, the other thing that Yahweh, I think, is an angry, he needs anger management. Here's a verse you won't hear preached on Sundays. This is from the book of Ezekiel. This is the Hebrew translation. This is the original translation. And it's chapter 4, verse 12. Ezekiel is talking to the Lord. And the Lord is telling Ezekiel that he is going to punish the city of Jerusalem and the house of Judah. And he tells Ezekiel in verse 12, eat it as a barley cake. You shall drink water by measure, but you will eat a barley cake, and you will bake it on human excrement before their eyes. So, said the Lord, shall the people of Israel eat their bread, unclean among the nations to which I will banish them. Okay, now you may start thinking, okay, I'm a little shocked at that, but maybe it's allegory. But then Ezekiel says, then I said, but Lord God, my person was never defiled. Nor have I eaten anything that died of itself or was torn by beasts from my youth and until now. My mouth has never eaten foul flesh. In other words, but God, I keep kosher. And he says, the Lord answered me, see, I will allow you cow's dung instead of human excrement. Prepare your bread on that. What kind of God would tell a human being to eat excrement? Now, in the King James Version, it's translated as dung, D-U-N-G. But people, what do you do when you read that verse? Do you just go, and turn the page and go to the next chapter? Or does one say, now, wait a minute. Where's the love there?
Right.
Where's the justice there?
And you start saying, are we talking about the same person?
That's what I'm talking about. And one could make an argument that Jesus is talking about a different God. I mean, we could make that argument, and I've heard scholars try and do that. But again, Jesus was a Jew. He was a different kind of Jew, but he was a Jew. He wasn't trying to start Christianity. Paul did that. It was called the Way. He talked about it in the chapter in Acts, in the book of Acts. Jesus was reforming Judaism. He didn't know anything about Christianity, and he certainly wasn't trying to start a new religion. But we've come to, we don't learn from Jesus' words. We don't have a gospel of Jesus. We have a gospel about Jesus. See, his personality is more important than his teachings.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's what he would want. I don't think if Moses came back or if Muhammad came back or Buddha, I think they would probably say, maybe not so much in some schools of Buddhism, but I'm sure they would say, you know what? This is not quite what maybe I had in mind.
Right.
That's powerful. That is.
So thank you for letting me get that in, because that's basically what the book is about, and I talk about the Quran too in the book, and the last chapter is my lessons learned from these experiences.
Well, and I think that's an important thing too, because our lives are all about learning lessons.
Yes.
Learning from what we go through. So.
Yeah, evolution and learning. And learning to love. I always come back to that. I always come back to that.
You know, learning to love
And it's tricky. I mean, we get over our own fear, but if we try to change people from having theirs, I mean, it's good. You can tell people where you're coming from, but that's it. You shake the dust off your feet, because otherwise you wind up trying to control them in the name of helping them with their fear. You know, listen, I can barely control my life. I don't know what's best for somebody else's life. But I know the ego can be very subtle, and I know I can be very intolerant sometimes. I can be intolerant of intolerance, which is I'm just as bad as the people that I want to change.
Right.
You know, like myself, I worked with Christina on investigations. I'm one of her lead investigators, and what drives me to go into the unknown is my curiosity in wanting to know, wanting to explore. Because I got this exploratory part of myself that wants to learn about things. So that allowed me to try to touch the unknown and, you know, learn more about God, learn about extraterrestrials, learn about how it affects us here, everything. I just want to learn all I can. So that's my drive to get over that.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'm that way as well. You know, I guess it's just this whole thing of self-exploration, and you know, once if there's no enemy, African saying that if there's no enemy within, the enemy without will do you no harm. And it's to me the exploration and the curiosity is about my inner self. You know, what am I about really? How do I fool myself? How do I fool others? You know, when am I being inauthentic? When am I being controlling, even when it's subtle? And it's just really easy to do, because when you're evolved, and as you're evolving, it's easy, it's just easy to subtly think, well, I'm evolved, and they aren't. So surely if they just listen to me, you know?
Absolutely. Well, it looks like we've got about 2 minutes to go, so again, thank you so much for coming on the show. We'll definitely need to have you come on the show again in the future. Again, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for, you know, enlightening everybody, sharing your story, you know, and your message.
Yes.
We want to thank all the listeners, everybody in chat. I know that we did encounter some problems with the servers, but the Blog Talk and all the other simulcasts did go through, so there will be links available. So if anybody missed any part of the interview, you'll be able to catch it. We'll post it on the page. So, again, thank you so much for listening to Aliens, UFOs, and Beyond, and we will see you next week. Good night, Renee.
Good night.
Good night.
And thank you, Reverend Carter, for being with us tonight. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Christine.
All right. Good night, everyone. Bye-bye.